Hello and welcome to Live at the Brentwood. Peter Thomas Fornatale, so happy to be back with you at the hippest hotel in Saratoga. Also a fantastic cocktail bar, a fact that gets affirmed as my Bloody Mary, made with Albany Distilling Vodka and Toma Bloody Mary mix, lands in front of me. Yes, it was that kind of Friday night last night. Has a bit of a Sunday morning feeling today, even though it's Saturday morning. And it's Saturday mornings when we record these shows live at the Brentwood in Saratoga, 10:30 a.m. If you want to come by and join us one of these weeks, we would love to have you. We have one guest on these shows, and today's guest, one of my favorite people in racing. I'm just going to say it. You've seen her on the America's Day at the Races broadcast. You've seen her on the Gulfstream simulcast feed, and you've heard her own fantastic In the Ring Pedigree podcast. She is Acacia Courtney. Acacia, how are things?
Hey, Pete. I'm doing great. Thanks for having me and that lovely introduction. Very much appreciate that. But yeah, it's been great. It's been the craziness of Saratoga. Saturday number two of the meet, and things just keep rolling on up here at the spa.
How have things been going for you so far this meet? Any strong opinions about any horses we've seen, about the experience of being back, anything along those lines?
You know, I think the greatest thing about it, though, is just getting a chance to have the fans back. It's been the storyline, but I think it's worth repeating. We started opening up at the Belmont meet with a limited number of fans, but Belmont is just such a massive track, though, too, that you still don't ever really get to feel, I think, so much of the buzz, with the exception of maybe Belmont Stakes Day, as you would on like a Thursday at Saratoga. And can't say thank you enough to the fans that have come out up here every single day. It's been great. Even when it rained on Sunday, there was a good crowd. And just seeing people crowd onto the apron and onto the rail, that's been the best. And catching up with fans from all over the place who've watched the show over the past year, that's really been appreciated too. The horses have put on some great shows. I think we've seen some really nice two-year-old performances, and looking forward to what's still to come.
Excellent. We've seen a lot of great coverage of the sport on the America's Day at the Races broadcast. You're part of a great team over there. I think of you as a little bit of the Swiss Army knife of the team. You can handicap, you can host, you can interview. And I've also been enjoying when you're looking at the horses in the paddock and giving your physical impressions of them. Where did you learn that skill?
Well, growing up, I rode. I started training in hunter jumper and dressage disciplines when I was 8, and you know, really was very involved in that when I was young. And then dancing kind of took over my life. In my past life, I thought I'd become a professional ballerina. Turns out I probably should have stuck with riding, given where my career was going to take me. But who knew that was what was going to happen? So I've always been around horses and involved with horses. And as many people know, aftercare is a big thing for me. My mom and I run Racing for Home, which is accredited by the Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance. We transition thoroughbreds into new careers, rehab them after their racing days are over, whatever it may be. So I started really doing that when I was 17, 18, at finishing high school and going into college. And so I was familiar with different type of injuries and physicality and things like that. The problem was, is that I knew what I was looking at. I just couldn't describe it and say it. So that's really something I worked on. I sat down with some horsemen that we worked with back in our stable and just kind of said, you know, go through all the anatomy, all the things with me, so I know how to actually say what I'm seeing. So it was kind of that combination of, okay, I know which horse looks good, and I know in my brain why. It's just, how do I describe that to people who are trying to bet these horses? So it's a fine balance.
That's so interesting. As you were talking about that, I was thinking about wine tasting as another discipline that's similar. There's something, and you know what it is, but getting that vocabulary to ascribe what something tastes like or looks like in English, it's a little bit tricky. Was it a skill? Did you pretty much hit the ground running with it, or did you have to hone it over time in terms of talking about horses that people are looking to bet on?
I think it really came with a lot of practice. When I first got into the industry, my first job was working with Horse Racing Radio Network and starting out doing interviews for them. And then I sat next to Anthony Stabile 3 days a week and handicapping different racetracks and things. So at that point, I wasn't really talking so much about horse flesh and physicality and things, though obviously it was something I was trying to pay attention to. When I really started at Gulfstream, that's where I kind of figured out what people understood and resonated with. You don't want to get too deep into the equipment and things like that casual fans are not going to really understand right at the start sometimes just takes too long to explain, and sometimes it's just not relevant to them. You know, if they're betting the pick five, they just want to know if the horse looks good or not. They don't care if it's a different kind of bit or a different
angle of
length
the
of the exactly yeah. a different yeah. length of the blinker cup or yeah. anything like that. So I find that I can learn more now, and I'm still learning to cherry pick what to talk about and how to phrase it that's going to be something that's helpful to people that are watching and betting the races, which is really who we are catering to and trying to teach people about the sport too.
If you were handicapping yourself as a paper handicapper versus somebody looking at the horses, you're betting your own money. Are you going to be equally reliant on those two skill sets, or do you tilt either towards the paper or towards the look stuff?
I'd probably go more towards the looking at horses, largely because when I handicap on paper, I rely on those notes too. You know, if I've seen a horse before and I wrote down, you know, looks like he needs a race or may want turf or may want to go a further distance, and then I'm handicapping, cause at Gulfstream I do the tip sheet 2 days in advance, so right. I'm handicapping those races and I see my notes. I wanted to see this horse go longer. Oh, he's stretching out. This is a horse that I'm going to take another look at. So I think I'd rely more on the notes that I take and the physical aspects that I pay attention to, because that's a huge part of my handicapping too.
That makes perfect sense. What do you use to keep track of the notes themselves?
I would be lost without my iPad. I have the Notability app, so I download all the past performances onto there, and I take notes with the Apple Pencil every day. So if something happened to it, I would be lost. There's years of past performances on here and notes, but it's really helpful to be able to quickly look back and see what I wrote last time out. And like I said, prepping for the shows, I look through those notes, watching replays, look at pedigrees, kind of putting them all together.
That makes a lot of sense to me, the way that you describe that, because I feel like in handicapping, the more you can put your own subjective view on the race, that might be a colleague like Jonathan talking about trip notes, but it also can be the physicality. And then to incorporate that, so your past performances aren't just the same static past performances that everyone else is looking at. They become a living, breathing thing. So I can understand you almost clutching your iPad when you talk when the idea flits across your mind of maybe losing it. Yeah, it's not it's an ongoing organism that is going to potentially give players an edge if they can develop a skill set like that.
For sure, and that's something I always say too. I feel like in the role that I play, being in the paddock, my main job is to give people playing information that they can't find on paper. You know, everybody can look and see that a horse finished a certain length behind last time out, but can they see that trip note? Can they see that a horse is looking much more fit this time, or not as good as he looked last time too? So those are things I really try to rely on and try to focus on. But obviously you're going to be wrong. They're living, breathing animals at the end of the day too. And so you have to take it all with a grain of salt and continue evolving. And I think it's really important to not get stuck in one particular mindset, whether that's about a certain horse or about a certain trainer's statistics or tendencies. That's the beauty of this game, is that it's always changing. You have to be able to evolve and keep an open mind.
Horse players are like sharks in that regard. You gotta keep moving. All right, here's an awkward question. So you mentioned giving positive looks notes and sometimes also giving negative looks notes. Have you gotten yourself in any trouble with any horsemen? Has anybody given you a hard time about something you've said about one of their horses?
Well, funny you should mention that. So actually, probably the best story is that so my fiance, Miguel Clement, is the assistant trainer to his dad, Christoph, and they've had a great start to the meet here, which is really, really exciting too. And we started dating in 2019 at Saratoga, and he was looking over my shoulder one day at my iPad, and I had written down that one of their two-year-olds looked a little fluffy. I think the actual word I used was chubby, which did not go over well, and he has yet to let me live that down.
How did the horse run, though?
That's the horse finished okay, but won next time out. I said he needed a race, yeah. So I was right about that, but he's never let me live that one down.
That's very, very funny stuff. Yeah. So you mentioned your background doing dancing. Mm-hmm. Do you feel like having an athletic background around yourself, does that inform the way you look at horse racing at all?
You know, it's funny. I actually haven't thought of it that way, but I would think probably yes. Always throughout my dance career, I was really good at picking up choreography. I had a strong memory. I'm a very, very visual person. And that's one of the things I loved about dance and ballet is that it is such a visual medium. And I think that's one of the things that I enjoy being around the horses in the paddock is because I am so visual. So I remember Ron Nicoletti and Jason Blewett joking with me down in Florida. He says, they all look the same to me, you know,
four legs and a tail, chestnut.
And, you know, that's about all the difference. And to me, they all look so unique. And, you know, you could mention a certain horse that I've seen multiple times, and I know exactly what that horse looks like. And sometimes I can't remember the horse's name, but I know what the horse looks like. So I think that that visual aspect of it is something that I've really enjoyed. Obviously, with dance, you need to be an athlete. There are certain things that are parallel. They're two very, very different worlds for sure. But if I had to say the similarities for my career, I think it would probably be the visual aspect of it that I rely on.
It's a great answer. When it came to time to learn paper handicapping for you, I assume you didn't, or maybe I'm wrong. Did you grow up betting on these animals? I'm assuming that it was in your HRRN days that you picked up the paper handicapping aspect, just thinking about your bio a little bit. Just curious what advice you'd give to somebody who was maybe in that position. Somebody who likes horses wants to learn more about the actual handicapping process. What were some of the lessons that you learned back in those days?
I think the biggest advice I would give would be to find somebody that's going to be willing to answer your questions, because I had so many questions when I first started and I felt so uncomfortable and embarrassed to ask them of anybody. You know, what does this symbol mean in the racing form? What does, you know, this horse, this phrase that we use, like a horse being rank or something like that, these phrases that we all rely on as horse players, and when you're totally new to the game, it just doesn't really make sense and you don't know where it's coming from. So I was really fortunate to sit next to somebody like Anthony Stabile, who answered all my questions, and if I made a mistake, as I made a lot, and obviously still do, or you were human,
how can but you not?
In those days, I was really kind of figuring things out as I went, and he would just gently tell me in commercial, hey, next time, this means that, or this is something to watch out for. And I really, really appreciated that, because he helped me learn that paper handicapping aspect that I didn't really have much of a grasp on. Growing up, my dad was always kind of a fan of racing. We would watch big races, and actually the only racetracks we really went to were the fair races in New England. So Northampton Fair and things like that. So that was kind of my start. But when I got involved in aftercare, that's where I really started trying to pay attention to where the horses were coming from as far as their racing days.
Wednesday was New York Aftercare Day here in Saratoga. I was thrilled. I thought it was an interesting potential template for other jurisdictions, just to shine a light on aftercare and create an awareness of the importance. It feels like a real sea change for me since when I got into the game, of the players, all the participants, down to the horse players, understanding the importance of this. What did you think of the way that all came off the other day?
I was really, really proud that we were able to have that day. I think it was overdue to have a day like that too, but I'm really glad. And I thought Naira did a tremendous job in highlighting different organizations and seeing horses like Zevo, who would become Cherie DeVoe's pony, leading out the post parade. It was just really cool to see horses highlighted in their new careers. And my own organization, something we do every day. It's a labor of love. I'm involved with the Thoroughbred Retirement Foundation. I know, as are you. And there's so many great organizations out there that are fighting the good fight, so to speak. It's not an easy thing to do, because sometimes you will get horses after their racing days are over and a donation, which is very generous. However, with a organization that's doing sanctuary or trying to transition a horse, sometimes you may have that horse for 5 years or more before you end up getting that horse to a new home. Or if it's a sanctuary, a horse could live for 20 more years. So they're costly animals. They're large animals, and it's difficult to keep up with that. So I think we've really made such tremendous strides as an industry in making that a big point of the conversation. And I always encourage anybody, if you make a big score at the track, consider giving a small donation to an aftercare organization and just say a little thank you to the horses that put a a major show on for us every day and allow us to have this great game.
I love that attitude. We always say that on our network, and I think it's true of the Fox broadcast as well. If you know, we don't take tips. If you score out based on something that we said, or we help you in some way, or heck, even if you're fading the horse that I gave, and that's your angle, if you hit big, please think of these horses themselves and helping them along when their racing days are done. What is the niche within the aftercare world that your charity is involved in? Let's hear a little bit more about the brass tacks.
We've really started to focus on rehabilitation. I think more than anything, we will end up actually with a lot of horses that just can't immediately be transitioned to new careers. So some aftercare organizations that focus on rehoming can't take them. For instance, we just got Celtic Chaos, who anybody that's followed New York racing for a while would know he was one of those war horses. He's now 8, I believe. And he has an injury, a tendon that will need 6 months or more as far as rehabilitation. And then we're hoping to transition him and maybe bring him back to the racetrack as a pony or something like that, which would be really cool. So he just arrived with my mom in Connecticut. We have 13 right now, and many of them are taking time that they need. And we're able to give that to them because we have a small number. We do also adopt out. We do also retrain horses to become show horses that end up in the permanent collection. But I think our main focus has been with rehabilitation.
And folks looking to give, what's the best way?
We accept donations mailed on our PayPal account. We have our social media. You can go to Racing for Home Inc. Spell it all out, F-O-R, racingforhomeinc.com. All of the information on there. We're 501c3, TAA accredited. So all of the donations go right to the horses.
That's great stuff. Excellent. Well, let's turn our attention a little bit to today's racing at Saratoga. We've got the CCA Oaks. Were you surprised that we just drew a field of four here?
I didn't expect it to be a big field, knowing Malathot would be pointed there, but a little surprised, and it is too bad. It's just a short field, but I think we'd have at least two really quality fillies with Malathot and Clarier, and the other two have really done little wrong, though they're obviously stepping up to face, I think, two really talented horses. Malathot undefeated at this point, and the conversation had been potentially to the Belmont Stakes, and Todd Pletcher saying that she has put on some weight and really flourished with that extra time off in between her races. And I had seen her up training here in Saratoga around Belmont time, and watching her workouts now, she really has put on some mass, which I think that she needed to and really will benefit from. She just tends to grind her rivals into submission, I think, out there on the track.
What do you think they're going to do tactically in this spot? In a weird way, I mean, I think in one way, you're thrilled when you only have three rivals. It's less chance of getting in traffic, certainly. But on another hand, it's not going to be necessarily a big pace to run into in front. How do you expect her to be ridden today?
Amazingly, I think that she might be on or right on top of the pace. She has shown some speed in her early races where we saw her running 7 furlongs to a mile, which I don't think she wants to do, but she has the rail. She has John Velasquez, who is a bit more of an aggressive rider compared with many that we see in the New York circuit, and she has some natural early foot. A horse like Clarier, who's talented, has no early speed, and I know that she stumbled last time, but typically you will never see her be up close to the pace. So I always try to go for the horse that I think will be forward in a short field.
So probably looking pretty good opportunity for Malathot today. What price do you expect her to be?
Oh, she'll be short. I mean, she might be 1-9 level in there, maybe.
I could see it. And maybe in that case, more of a race to watch than to bet. Mm-hmm. But for those playing the... I'm not wholly averse to the idea of just taking that as a free taking her as a free square in the early pick five and taking a little bit more of an action approach. Yeah, it is interesting looking at some pace figures. She might well just end up on the lead, though. I would expect rock paper scissors best chance of getting some black type would be to under aggressive handling by Saez might be to be the target for her and then hang on.
Yeah, I'm sure the goal with a filly like her who is well bred, she's half to Rule, who was a multiple graded stakes winner, won the Sam F. Davis among others on the Kentucky Derby trail. She's also the foal to Matru, who liked to go a distance of ground. So I don't think on pedigree stretching out will be any problem for her. She's just going right into the deep end. But if she were to finish in the top three in a grade one at Saratoga, it does a lot for her residual value too. Yep.
Means so much. And when the sale eventually comes, they're mm-hmm. they're going to say third in a grade one. They're not going to say there was only four horses.
Right. Nobody has to know that part.
It's going to look really good on the page. That's for sure. Yeah. I'm looking at some current international prices, 2-9 right wow. now on Malathot. Yeah, that's probably short enough. We may keep the money in the pocket on that one, but I am looking forward to it. I think she's so cool. And I definitely want to check it out. What are some of the other races on today's card that you're interested in chatting about?
Well, I think the race after, a two-year-old race, some sprinting today, is a fun one. It's a big field. You've got, as always, some big pedigrees in there. And I always really enjoy following the two-year-old races at Saratoga because so often we see the future stars starting their careers right here. And it's always kind of fun to look at some of these families, and especially after you've been in the game for a few years. I mean, for me, you know, coming into it later, now I'm just starting to get to see horses that I remember on the track and see their progeny, which I think is always really fun and something I enjoy very much. Chad Brown has, not surprisingly, one that looks pretty good in Watasha by Into Mischief. And on the bottom side, the second generation is really, really strong. Second Dam is multiple grade one winner Jersey Girl, making the dam of this colt a sister to Jersey Town. So big pedigree there to suggest that colt may be live at first asking. And I think Safi Joseph's Labard is going to be pretty tough too. Typically not a barn that we see with two-year-old firsters, but has picked up a lot stronger stock and has had a really good year in New York.
You made the point before about how things evolve, and sometimes it's just for trainers and which categories they excel in. It just depends on what's in the barn. And mm-hmm. as your owners change, as your profile raises, you can go from being somebody not known for two-year-olds to known for two-year-olds in short order. So I think it would be a mistake to count Labard mm-hmm. out based on that. There's some other really interesting pedigrees in this race. Have you... I'm trying to see if Watasha has been up here. Yeah, have you had a chance to see Watasha in the flesh? I'm wondering, you know, the tote board will tell us, is this going to be one of these buzzy type horses?
I would think perhaps with the pedigree, it's some sharp workouts on the main track at Saratoga. I haven't seen this one, and if I have, I haven't been pointed out as to who it is. Typically, I come up here every Monday, Tuesday when we're not at Belmont, and I will always come out in the mornings because I enjoy it too. Sometimes there's like 25 Chad Brown horses that come on the track and you don't exactly know who's who. So I don't off the top of my head, but I'm looking forward to seeing him.
Yeah, well, we're all going to get a good look and the tote board's going to tell us a lot on that. But the pedigrees run deep in here. One thing mm-hmm. I always like to look at is foals making their first race out of dams that have been very productive. Mm-hmm. And there's a couple at prices in this spot who fit that bill. I mean, Watasha being one of them. There's a horse who's going to be a huge price in here. I'm really excited to see the 10 Fluid Situation mm-hmm. just based on the fact that that this damn Volatile Vicky has had 7 winners from 7 starters. I think that's interesting. And Warrior's Reward, that they can win first out. I don't have any inside information or anything, but that's one I was looking at as a potential long shot to maybe get in the mix with the likes of Watasha and Labard and the rest of these here in this loaded looking sixth race.
Oh, absolutely. I agree. And Warrior's Reward, not exactly the most kind of flashy, sexy type of stallion like an Into Mischief, but that this one's a foal to Axelrod, who was good going long on dirt. And just as far as being a producer, said 3 who were winners at the age of 2 as well. So I like to see that precocity in the families.
Where else is your eye drawn on this card? We've got stakes action a little bit later and, you know, pretty interesting 11 race card today.
Yeah, I agree. The 10th race is the Caress and I'm excited about this one. I did get the earliest scratches and saw that Jakarta is out. So that's, I think, changes the pace. It could mean that Robin Sparkles is alone on the front end. So I think that that will be really interesting. I have really been a fan of Caravelle, Pennsylvania bred. She's just really been so cool for Elizabeth Merriman. And she's coming in here after a private purchase, Bobby Flay buying into her as well. And I thought that she was going to get a great trip, and I still think that she might. I just wonder, without the presence of Jakarta, if we might see Robin Sparkles just get comfortable in the front end.
Yeah, that changes my view of the race. I thought Caravelle was going to get the absolutely perfect trip.
Too.
Was thrilled to see the Bobby Flay taking over and being able to still, at least for today, be running for Elizabeth Merriman, a trainer I've got a good history with. Trained some horses for Sean Clancy and myself back in the day and did a wonderful job. Very underrated horsewoman all the way around. Great to see her in a big stage here in Saratoga. But I was really relying on the Sayas Jakarta thing to keep Robin Sparkles honest. You give her too much of a head start, she could be long gone.
She's fast, and I like her too. I've been such a fan of her, the New York bred Robin Sparkles, who has just been really talented in winning in these New York bred company and open company as well. I thought that she was one that I would be happy to see win. Again, just really thought that Caravelle was going to get the great trip. Taz has always shown speed, but that's been going longer. I just don't know how I feel about her turning back in distance, and she's been off form lately. For me, I thought it was really between the one and the two in this spot, and I still think that's the case. So now it'll be a little bit more of a rider's race between the Ortiz brothers.
Yes, which is always interesting.
Yes.
I'll nominate Flower Point to run third to those two for Shug McGahey and Joelle Rosario. I think it's going to probably be a little sharp for her to beat those top two, but I think she'll be running late as an interesting candidate to come fill out the try. Maybe play that one. I don't think I can play it cold, but you know, a bigger 2-1-5 and a smaller 1-2-5 might be my approach.
I like that. The typical Shug McGahey later developing type, giving her a lot of time. Got the win last time out in good spirits, rounds out the field for Al Stahl, who's always dangerous when bringing horses up here. Wonder what she will do with John Velasquez aboard. It seems she's kind of found her home sprinting. We'll see how she stacks up against these.
It's a cool race for sure. Mm-hmm. We just got a couple of minutes left. Acacia, I want to talk about your podcasting and this great job you've done reviving and revitalizing the In the Ring Pedigree podcast. Certainly a lot going on in the breeding industry this summer up here with the 100th facing Tipton sale. I imagine we'll be getting some good coverage of that.
Yeah, really excited about that. It's a sale I've always enjoyed. I've gotten to cover it in the past with Horse Racing Radio Network and with Phasic Tipton, and really looking forward to being at the sale this year. And I had a chance to catch up with Anna Seitz from Phasic Tipton on last week's podcast. She gave us a great preview of what's to come. And we didn't get to have this sale last year because of COVID. So celebrating the 100th anniversary this year, a sale that's back, that's always just a great environment during the Saratoga meet too. And for people that are not buying, you want to come and get a drink and kind of witness million-dollar horses going through the ring. It's a great place to experience it. And after that, the New York bred sale that's back too. I think that that was one that we really missed last year as well, because the New York bred industry has grown so much, and for some of the smaller trainers and New York horsemen, I think we're really hurt by not getting a chance to shop at that New York bred sale. So I'm excited to see all of that back, and of course we'll be covering the two-year-old action at Saratoga and Del Mar, and really have been enjoying doing this show and appreciate all the good feedback.
You've been doing a great job, and I'm glad you pointed that out about the sales. They will be open to the public, which wasn't certain for a long time with where we were with COVID, but really just for those wondering who coming to Saratoga, people ask, when should I come to Saratoga? I would always suggest to highlight that weekend, and then because you get the Whitney, and then you've got the sales on Monday and Tuesday night. Fans are welcome. You know, you got to be sensitive and smart walking around that sales ground, but it's an incredible thing to see. You'll see all kinds of industry players, beautiful horse flesh, and we really can't wait. I think it's going to be super fun. I'm really looking forward to your coverage on the In the Ring Pedigree podcast in particular.
Yeah, we're definitely going to be covering all the bases for that sale, and I think it's just once again speaks to getting normalcy back, getting Saratoga back, and all of that excitement, and celebrating how far and what an achievement it is for 100 years for a sales company, and how much it's grown, how much this particular sale has developed and becoming an integral part of the Saratoga meet.
Great stuff, Acacia. Thank you so much for taking time out of a busy Saturday morning to come here with us live at the Brentwood. We encourage folks to join us on future Saturdays. The shows go at 10:30. We've got bagels now, too. I forgot to mention the bagels. So you can come here, have a little bit of breakfast with us, and have some fun and get a chance to say hi. Acacia mentioned before about people with questions. One thing that racing Twitter and racing coverage in general in 2021 could be good for is we're here to answer them. If you have questions, hit me up. InTheMoneyPodcast.com. There's a comments page there, or on Twitter. I'm at Looms Boldly. Where can folks find you on there?
I'm at Acacia_Courtney. You can find me on all social media. And if you're at the track, come over and say hi. I'd love to catch up.
Great stuff, Acacia. So I will thank you one more time. We'll thank our sponsors, including Toma Bloody Mary Mix, Albany Distilling, and of course, our friends here at the Brentwood. We will be back next week. Check us out in the meantime over at InTheMoneyPodcast.com. That's going to do it. This show's been a production of In the Money Media. Our business manager is Drew Coatney. Our chief creative officer is Jonathan Kinchin, who has been confirmed for a future edition of Live at the Brentwood, by the way. I'm Peter Thomas Fornital. May you win all your photos.